Welcome to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Roughly 10% of the American workforce was working from home before the pandemic hit. The trend line accelerated this month when state governments across the country ordered non-essential workers to stay home, forcing companies to rely on a remote workforce. Take the staff at Wired, a technology magazine headquartered in San Francisco. When the office workers at Wired were sent home, even they found themselves without the tools they needed to do their jobs. And that inspired a special section devoted to an array of tech gear and other ideas to help those hunkering down in their homes. Parker Hall is a staff writer and product reviewer at Wired Magazine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Ann.
So not all the items are tech-related. Let's start with the non-tech-related ones. What are you looking at here?
Okay, yeah. So we thought a lot about things that make people feel more comfortable at home. So that's not just technology. A lot of the stuff that we think about is just comfort-based. So the first thing that we thought was good advice for someone who's feeling anxiety, perhaps, about the COVID epidemic is the Casper weighted blanket. It's a 15-pound weighted blanket, and it sort of makes you feel like you're being hugged by someone. And it's great for good for anxiety and for restless sleepers. So that's one of the things that, you know, immediately our team left out and was excited about sharing with people.
All right. So did you have a favorite among all of these things?
I've got to say I am an audiophile. So for me, it's definitely the noise-canceling headphones. I do a lot of our headphone and TV reviews here at Wired. And so that's kind of my favorite part of things. But I will say, you know, if you're looking for a good pair of headphones because, you know, you're working from home and your kids are annoying you, your dog's annoying you, your roommates, your significant other, it can be a good idea to grab a pair of noise-canceling headphones, because they'll sort of isolate you from everything going on around.
Do you have a pick on the best?
Yeah, so we've been a long-time fan of the Sony models. There's a which, of course, are all a mouthful, but my favorite model is called the WH-1000X-M3. And that pair of headphones is amazing. It offers over 30 hours of battery life, so you barely ever have to charge them. You almost get a whole full work week out of them. And they really reduce the noise around you. So you won't hear, you know, your roommates cooking in the kitchen upstairs. You won't hear your dog barking at the neighbor dog, that kind of thing. It's pretty amazing.
What about the best for your buck? Well, I guess, how much are these?
So those headphones are a pretty penny. They're about $300. The good news is that the technology has been getting so much smaller and more affordable that we have companies like Tautronics, who's a company out of China that makes a great pair of headphones, noise-canceling headphones. They're just called the Tautronics Active Noise-Canceling Headphones, and they're just $50. So the prices range considerably. I will say that the, you know, performance peaks at around $300 a pair, and if you're paying much more than that, you're paying sort of for a vanity product.
And what about for kids? Because I would think, you know, noise-canceling headphones for kids might be a really good idea to help them, you know, if they're working, doing their homework from home, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a pair of noise-canceling headphones we really like for kids called the Puro Sound Labs, Puro Quiet, which are designed for kids. And what's cool about these headphones, not only do they reduce the sound around you, and they're a cool-looking pair of wireless headphones, so kids will get excited about them. What I like about them is they limit the sound, the volume of the sound, to 85 decibels, which is the physician recommended level for long-term noise exposure. So you know that your kids aren't like blasting their ears out and damaging their hearing.
You know, I am concerned when I'm out walking, seeing people with headphones on walking, and I think they're probably noise-canceling headphones, and I'm just wondering, is that wise?
It depends. I mean, we always recommend if you're out and about that you pay attention to your surroundings. A lot of these headphones now have technology. A lot of companies call it hear through or listen through, but essentially listens. It uses the microphones on the headphones to listen to what's going on in the environment around you and pipe that into your headphones so you can actually hear what's going on. So that's something I would advise for people who are out and about walking your dogs, going on runs. It's always good to have a pair of headphones that can pipe in some of that sound. So if a car is honking at you, if someone's yelling at you, you can still hear them.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about technology that help you work from home. My guest is Parker Hall. He's a staff reporter and product reviewer for Wired Magazine. They discovered, even though they are a technology magazine, that when the office workers were sent home because of the COVID-19 pandemic, even they found themselves without the tools they needed to do their job. So they did a special section on it. If you have a question or comment, and especially if you have a suggestion for a way to improve your home work environment, excuse me, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Parker Hall, for working from home, are people finding the added internet traffic is a problem?
I haven't heard too much about that from my coworkers. Luckily, we all live in bigger cities with pretty good internet pipelines. Although we have heard about some companies in Europe, big streaming companies, so Netflix, Amazon, you know, the companies that are using tons and tons of bandwidth for their video streaming. We've heard about them reducing their top sort of tier of fidelity to save bandwidth so that other people don't have problems streaming stuff. It seems like that's sort of being solved on the company side in a lot of cases.
Is it noticeable?
No. I mean, not to anyone that doesn't have a very, very expensive home theater.
Okay. Is there a Wi-Fi router? If people are kind of dealing with that for the first time at home, what do you recommend for that?
Yeah, totally. So that is one thing that we have heard, is that our coworkers come home and they're working from home with a couple of roommates, and all of a sudden it's getting tougher to connect to the internet and to get strong signal to everyone. Mm-hmm. So we really like this smart Wi-Fi router from Netgear. It's called the Nighthawk. It's $110, and it really just helps you sort of up your throughput and make it so that, you know, if you have a bunch of kids and roommates and everyone's on their cell phones and laptops and everything, iPads, that you'll have enough throughput there.
And if you split it up with your roommates, it's not so bad. For business conferencing, you suggest a new webcam. Which one?
Yeah, so we really like the Logitech C920S. It's an HD, so it's full 1080p resolution, which is awesome. You won't look fuzzy like you do on some of those laptop cameras. And it's only $70. You know, a good webcam honestly lasts for a very long time. We have coworkers who've had theirs for a decade. So, you know, it's not a bad idea to just buy a good one now and have it around.
You know, I don't know. The fuzzy camera on the laptop, I don't mind that. Fuzzier the better, my friend. Fuzzier the better. but to store data, there's a USB that you recommend. What's that?
To store data, well, to be honest, our favorite data storage is in the cloud. So any kind of Google cloud storage is amazing. But if you're moving stuff on the go, it's always good to have a USB stick. So, you know, right now that's probably less necessary just because you are not probably leaving home with a bunch of data. But yeah, so just grab yourself a nice cheap USB stick whenever you can find one. There, you know, get a couple gigabytes and it should be big enough for any file you need to transfer to people.
Listeners, we've gotten a couple calls about folks who want to talk about the issue of being forced to work as essential workers and what that means. And I wanted to let you know that coming up on Friday, we're devoting an entire hour to labor issues and all of these kinds of problems that are out there. Not everybody agrees on whether or not they should have to go to work or not. And if you have a question or comment about that, please tune in on Friday and check that out at 10 a.m. And I think we probably repeat it Friday night, too. Or you can go online and check out our archives and our podcasts when it comes to that. So we are right now, we're talking with Parker Hall of Wired Magazine about technology for working at home if you have to work at home. If you have any ideas, if something you've done helps you working at home, give us a call. Let me know, because eventually I'm probably going to wind up at home too, broadcasting from home. And I'd love to hear your ideas. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Besides the Casper weighted blanket, you talk about some apps for people to deal with anxiety, maybe if they're not sleeping well, which we need to do more than ever in these times. What kind of apps?
Yeah, so one of the apps that we keep hearing about and that my coworkers and I absolutely love is the Calm Meditation and Sleep app. It's essentially exactly as it's advertised. It's a meditation and sleep app, and you pay $12 a month for a premium subscription, and essentially you get guided phone meditations through your smartphone, and it helps lull you to sleep or calm you down if you're feeling stressed.
You know, I think I was mentioning it to a couple of friends yesterday. I don't know if people would think I'm crazy, but I thought maybe doing a 5-minute meditation every day on the show for listeners, since so everything we're doing right now is about the pandemic. I don't know if that would help or not. It's just a thought I had. But I love my meditation guide, you know, my meditation app. They're usually about 10 or 12 bucks a month, right?
Yeah. So anywhere around there, and just make sure you if you're looking through them and trying to find one that seems most compatible for you in your app store, just make sure that they have good reviews. A lot of these have tons and tons of reviews, so as long as you are reading them and the people don't seem to think it's a sham, you're probably good to go.
Coming up, we are going to be talking to Warren Buchleitner from Children's Technology Review about apps, but part of your special section did address children and what kind of apps are out there, what kind of subscription services for them. What did you find?
Yeah, so we're actually really excited about this subscription, the new subscription model for kids. It's pretty interesting. There's everything from different food subscription models to our favorite, which is called the Kiwi Crate from KiwiCo. And that company basically offers a wide array of gift boxes for everyone from toddlers to teens. And basically, you just pick boxes that are aimed at your specific interests. So my coworker Adrian So has a 5-year-old daughter, and they got a crate with rainbows and an age-appropriate stained glass window-making kit. Which, of course, led them to talk about whether black or white were all of the colors or none of the colors. So there's lots of, you know, there's lots of these gift subscription boxes for kids that can really help you sort of drum up an activity in a time when you're all sort of trapped indoors.
Yeah, there's a really cool one for cooking from Cooks Illustrated, too. I was wondering if you guys have talked at all about the issue with Amazon doing essentials only shipping. A lot of this stuff, what's qualifying for that right now?
So that is a little bit of a black box right now. So what we've heard is essentially that they're not restocking anything that they deem non-essential, but that everything that's currently in the warehouses and that they have will still ship. So, you know, if it's something that there's a large stock of and they have it, they'll ship it to you still.
But that just sounds like it's creating going to be another rush.
Yeah, so that's another thing that we really want to make sure people are aware of is, panic buying is a thing, and please do not participate in that sort of part of the economy right now. So a lot of what we did in our coverage for this coronavirus gear guide at Wired was focused on using stuff that you already have at home to entertain your kids. You know, everyone has some Legos around. Everyone has something in the closet, maybe some tape and some scissors. Just definitely be aware when you order any of this stuff. First of all, I would say be okay with waiting a while for it to arrive. Mm-hmm. Be okay with it being, potentially being backstocked. And just know that, companies like Amazon are really trying to prioritize the products, shipping out the products that people might really need immediately over something like, a brand new Wi-Fi router that will improve your life, but that they can, ship you a little later.
Obviously, technology is essential in our day and age, and places like Micro Center and those kind of things, they're staying open. But my husband went to one yesterday, and you had took a number at the door, and they called you in when they were ready for you. There was a lot of social distancing.
Yeah, yeah. So that's another thing to be aware of, is just make sure you're adhering to proper social distancing with any kind of, you know, your mailman, everyone, obviously. But when it comes to packages, I would say it's a best idea to just make sure that you everything's clean and that you wash your hands after you take everything out of the package as well, because we do know that the virus can stay on cardboard for over 24 hours.
Hmm. Well, for now, Parker Hall, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. Stay well.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Ann.
Parker Hall is a staff writer and staff reporter and product reviewer for Wired Magazine. We'll post a link to their guide for helpful hints at working at home in this day of the pandemic. Coming up, we're going to hear from Warren Buckleitner of the Children's Technology Review about all those great apps for kids, because heaven knows we need to distract them with something. Give us a call if you have ideas, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. With nonstop togetherness, families are having to acclimate to a new normal and adjust rules and routines to get them through the day. When it comes to kids and technology, experts say striking a balance is key. So, too, is striving for quality screen time. In its March issue, the Journal of the American Medical Association found that younger children's language skills suffered when screen time increased. So, another reason. Two factors mitigated the language loss: when children engaged with educational material and when parents actively participated in the process. Warren Buckleitner is an educational psychologist who reviews children's interactive media. He's taught at the preschool, elementary, and college level. He's the founding editor of Children's Technology Review, and we welcome him back. It's been a long time. Hi, Warren.
It's been a while, and I'm glad we're both healthy, Ann.
Yep, so far so good. Why is it, what do you understand and know about why it's so difficult for parents to develop and practice consistent rules with screens and technology?
Well, I mean, in part, it's so fun, right? The screen for all of us is such a portal to wonder, and, you know, every answer is there and the news is there and it's so many things. And so kids are humans too. They, you know, it's a little window of wonder. And so, you know, it's well, the kids would say, well, duh. but, you know, I think this is obviously, has always been a controversial issue. It's been well discussed and debated. And my friend Chip Donahue, who's also a Fred Rogers senior fellow, says that it's not about screen time, it's about time. And it's really, I think, important during this time when we're all together as families to really focus on the time and whether or not screens are involved or not. That you know, that's the big thing to think about.
And what you mean by that is quality time. Is it quality?
And, you know, there are lots of ways you can use a screen to enhance that. Build relationship with your child, as opposed to them going away and being isolated in a game of Fortnite, you know, for the next 3 days. You know, you're missing an opportunity. And I think right now is such a rare opportunity for families to be together, where a lot of distractions have been cut away involuntarily. And so use this as a time to build those relationships. And, you know, if a screen's involved, fine. Actually, the screen can help us all stay. The technology can help us be together. And I'm seeing wonderful uses of technology, such as library story hours on Facebook Live. And, you know, I just taught my class with using Zoom yesterday. And I have to say, it was wonderful. The students all had a chance to share their home environments, and you know, they put their dogs and cats on the screen for a while, and it was so cool. So you know, this isn't all bad.
You know, it is kind of interesting. You know, how lucky we are in this distancing of our between each other that we do have social media. I mean, I'm able to listen to front porch concerts, you know, neighborhood sing-alongs. There's all kinds of things that we're sharing online that we never really used to do.
And, you know, I'm down here in Georgia with my daughters. Both daughters are with me and my grandson. And, you know, there's an elderly person next door. And so we're having some wonderful across the back fence conversations and sharing things and recipes, and that wouldn't have happened if it weren't for this sort of forced situation.
When we contacted you the other day, you were using virtual reality to go rock climbing, which sounds really, really cool. Although I'm a little afraid of heights, but what interactive tools do you recommend for homebound kids?
Well, if you have it, the Oculus Quest is a really important new platform. Oculus is owned by Facebook. It's cool because, you know, I happen to throw mine in the suitcase before I came down. It's $400. It's self-contained, so no computer required. It does need to be online to download the app. The app that I was using is called The Climb, and $30. And you think you're on the face of a granite cliff, and birds are flying around you, and you work up a sweat and you start moving and you take off your goggles and there you are in your living room. And so if you haven't tried VR, I think this platform is important because it's sort of a tipping point for the whole VR thing that we've been watching for a long time, in that it's under $500. It's a standalone and it just works.
I'm kind of excited about that. How are you, you know, now we have kids that from birth are being exposed to screen time, being exposed to technology that I'm still in wonder over, frankly. Is that changing appropriate limits for kids in technology over time? Is it changing how we measure that?
You know, that's a great question, Anne. Technology is part of culture. It's part of the overarching kinds of rules and the way our humans relate to each other. And we're 2020, and this whole coronavirus thing has really pushed us into the involuntarily again. 2020 is going to go down as the year where we look back on, you know, before and after. And kids are right in the middle of that. And the children are watching everything about what their parents do. And, you know, technology can be your best friend, and it can be your worst enemy. I think it's really critical to focus on the important things, just like with food. You know, you focus on good nutrition over junk food all the time. You got to make technology, and always think about it before you turn on an app or a device. Think about, does this make my relationships and my life better? Do I walk away from the experience with something good and, you know, quote, nutritious that I didn't have when I first came to the experience? And I think that's a really good way of sort of gauging it. And we all need to do that for ourselves, because every one of us has a unique family or child situation.
You know, I know there are a lot of young people listening out there. They do every day. Maybe they're forced to, but they're probably a lot more than usual because they're home from school. Some kids listen to the show for school, as homeschooled kids do. If you have some ideas about what apps you think give you that sense, are nutritious apps, but also fun. Enjoyable, give us a call. I'd like to hear what you think. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So let's talk about some apps. What you think makes a good app for a kid?
Yeah, well, I have a 1.5-year-old grandson that I've really been having a blast with. And my daughter is very leery of grandpa and his iPad. And so it's funny because the ultimate irony is she was my guinea pig when I raised her, and she had every screen in the world, you know, to test. But she says, Dad, not so much time on that iPad. But we're using My Very Hungry Caterpillar. It's very important to remember the word my. So get the right one. It's from Story Toys. And the two of us sit down together, and everything is finger-driven. So my grandson has learned that he can tap the egg and move the fruit, feed the caterpillar, and it's an experience that enhances his control. And so that gives us a lot of wiggle room for us to take turns and talk. And it's one of his favorite activities right now. He'll run and get the iPad, and that's the app he starts. And so it's called My Very Hungry Caterpillar. It's $3. I'm sure it's iOS. I don't know. It might be on Android. But that's just such a wonderful
It's based experience. On the Eric Carle series, right?
Yeah, it's okay. Eric Carle's. It's all the original art, and it's great. The other thing that I'm using with him is all the Sago mini apps. So those are, again, designed around child control, child engagement, and they all have multi-touch. So you can have your finger on the screen. They have their finger on the screen. You can feed the animals together. And that's an example of using this medium to enrich our, you know, I'm building a bond. It's so precious. And I think I'm going to walk away from this time as like, I'm so lucky. It's like someone's watching out for us. Go down to Georgia, spend some real quality time. And so I'm getting that.
Is that where you're at in Georgia?
Yeah, I'm down in Georgia and taught my class in my New Jersey, my TCNJ class remotely yesterday. And I'm you know, scary because I'd never done it before, but it worked.
You talk about child control. What do you mean by that?
So basically, a good way to assess an app is if you walk out of the room or if you leave, does it wait for you? Many experiences for kids, including TV, will push the content at the child. It does, you know, television doesn't care if you're in the room or not. Good digital experiences for children will interact, so it's a turn-based back and forth. And so that is what I mean by that. It's kind of like human metaphor. If you sit down with someone who talks too much, you know you want to turn them off. And every app should be designed so, particularly for younger children, so that the child can drive the experience and it's a back and forth. So not too many designers understand that, but fortunately there are quite a few that do, and there's stuff out there.
You suggest using a smart speaker to stay on task.
Yeah.
How does that help?
Well, I suggested that just because daily routine is so important. So, you know, parents, you right now are like, oh man, I got a house full of kids. How do I survive? And any teacher knows that you set up a daily schedule and you stick to it and use your smart speaker for reminders. So, like, you know, try to keep the sequence of events sort of consistent, and kids will settle down. And so I know everyone has different aged kids, but you know, it'll remind children and you sort of walk you through the day as sort of your GPS for time. Both Amazon's and Google's are outstanding and also your Google Calendar, you can program that to sort of important reminders and so on. We're using our smart speaker for animal sounds right now. So, you know, just ask.
And it's something your kid can help you program.
Well, you can make your list together.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
You know, have a family meeting and kind of say, guys, what are we going to do? And also plan meals out. We try to make a special supper and we work on it all day together. And so, you know, we had this amazing pesto sauce last night on pasta that we, you know, it was slow. It was a slow experience. And, you know, rather than sort of grabbing something, we're sitting down and really enjoying the food that we're making. And it's such a rich experience. I'm sure other people are having that too, but having fun with it.
Let's see. Braden in Norwood, you're on the air. Hi, Braden.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So I was calling to talk about the apps that we use for my baby sister.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We have her on an iPad, and we use a lot of like entertainment apps like YouTube Kids and PBS TV. I don't know what the name of it is called. And she seems to really like those.
Yeah, PBS has some really good apps, and there's no cost for them. The TV one is a great way to deliver PBS programming. It sounds like you're doing the right thing.
Hey, Braden. Braden?
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm 15.
So,
I'm in 10th grade.
Yeah, okay. And a 2-year-old baby sister, so you're are you at home, or do you usually homeschooled?
What was your question again?
Well, are you usually at home, or are you homeschooled?
Not homeschooled.
Okay, so you're home from school now.
Yes.
Yeah, gotcha.
Our school has been closed.
Yeah. You doing long distance? Are you doing long distance learning too?
Yes.
How's that going?
I think it's going all right.
You like it okay?
I really miss the social aspects of school.
Exactly.
Which is one of the things that I really enjoyed about it, but the learning is almost the same, just without the help of teachers there with you.
Yeah. Well,
Braden,
go ahead.
What tools are you using to deliver the lesson?
We use Google Classroom.
Okay.
And Google Drive to do the work.
Yep. We use Google Docs, Google Drive here.
Yeah.
Works pretty well.
And so most of our teachers update us through Google Classroom and post like online assignments for us to do. And
well, you sound like a really great big brother. How old is your
Are you brother or sister? I can't tell.
I'm a brother.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry too, yeah. No. Yeah, it's your little sister, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's lucky.
Yeah, she
she's
is.
Lucky to have. And that's the important thing is, you know, take the time to play this stuff together and watch what people are doing and see if it feels good about it. You mentioned YouTube, and YouTube has got a lot of really great videos to watch together, and we also use YouTube to watch, especially for cooking things, and just we were watching some wolf videos yesterday, and you know it's so fun to sort of sit down and watch those together.
Braden, thank you for listening to my call out, and thanks for calling. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enjoy your 2-year-old baby sister.
I will.
Okay. Take care.
Yeah.
Take care.
Let's see. Peter in Worthington, you're on the... Nope. Peter, let Peter go. Let me put Peter on the air. There we go. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Yes. I think it's very important for children to learn to read, to be motivated. We have to motivate them.
Mm-hmm.
And when we read to a child, what we're doing is we're modeling for them. Now, ask yourself, what's the child thinking in his brain while you're reading to him? He's looking up at you and he's thinking, oh, Mom, Mommy likes books. I really have to like books too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're doing. You're modeling for these children.
Yeah.
So later when they're out of preschool and into first grade, they're going to take right off like a jet. They're going to really look for books to read, and they're going to do well. They're going to become very articulate. My nephew's mom is the daughter of an ambassador, and her kids are all gifted. Why? She reads them every night, all three of them.
So, and this is do you really have any basic. Favorite? Do you have favorite books that you're reading right now?
Well, you're going to laugh. I'm 81 years old, but I read a really cute thing from the Disney Press. It was a New York Times bestseller. It's about a little Chinese girl. It's made on Mulan. It's a takeoff on Mulan, and it's so cute. And it's, like, better than Harry Potter, really, because the adventures of Mulan. And this girl has a little backpack, and in the backpack is a jade rabbit. Wow, and he's a magic jade rabbit. And it just goes on and on. Now, this is what Einstein said. He said, read fairy tales to your children.
Yeah.
In fact, there might even be a book out entitled Einstein's Favorite Fairy Tales. But this is the thing. We have to really motivate our kids to read. What if the electricity stops and we don't have any?
Yeah,
apps?
No kidding. Yeah. Well, Peter, I'm going to move on to one more caller, and thank you so much for your call. Always a good suggestion, reading, and any kind of apps that can help and incorporate reading into our life.
Real fast, I think Peter is making a great point that it's not an either or with the technology. Technology shouldn't replace books. We're using, I'm reading, we're reading a lot, and this is actually a great time to get into some books. So children's books especially. So, rediscover some of those classics.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Thank you, Peter, for that. And one more quick call from Kim and Powell. Hi, Kim. You're on the air.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to put my 2 cents in about technology and young children. I have an 8-year-old grandson who's high-spectrum autistic. And from the time he could crawl, he would play with apps that gave him self-control. And one of the things he had trouble with when he started to go to school was his emotional control, self-control. And he got much better in learning to control things with the apps and with the different games. Even now, he finds some peace and self-control when he plays video games.
Very
and
good
he's
point.
He's very adept at it. He's very, very adept. But he has been mainstreamed into the school system, and he is performing at a third grade reading level and math level.
Wow.
The only issues he does have are his emotional meltdowns sometimes.
Yeah.
So
that's a really great point.
He's doing very well.
Again, another upside of technology that we often forget about. Warren Buckleitner, we are out of time. I got to let you go, but thank you so much. I hope you'll come back.
Yeah, stay safe, everybody, and thanks, Ann, for having me.
You bet. Warren Buckleitner is editor of Children's Technology Review. Coming up, we're going to hear from Russell Holley, contributing editor at Android Central. Haven't heard from him in a few weeks because we've been preempted by other things. So stay with us. This is Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Since Microsoft unveiled its Xbox Series X 3 months ago, details about the system have been limited, but there are some clues. Joining us with more details is Russell Holley, contributing editor at Android Central. Welcome back, Russell.
Hey, thank you.
It's called the most responsive console ever built. Those are big words. What are they talking about?
Yeah, so, this is something that we're not expecting for a while, and I think Microsoft just decided that its audience, because all of the gaming events were canceled, their audience kind of needed some good news. So they really just kind of did a live video stream where they just kind of dumped a whole bunch of information. And where that responsive information comes from is this Xbox is going to have a special drive slot in the back of it. It's kind of unlike anything we've ever seen Sony or Microsoft do before, in that, in current generations, you can take whatever hard drive you want and you can kind of attach it to the side and you can store games on it. But the challenge there is you can't really control, Microsoft can't really control how fast that drive is or what the quality of it is. So you kind of lose performance, you risk losing performance in doing so, especially over a USB cable. what Microsoft has done with this special slot is made it so that there are really high-end, high-quality drives that will be able to connect just by sticking them in, almost like a game cartridge, almost like the old Nintendo cartridge.
Oh, okay.
You'll be able to stick this in and install games on it, and it by doing so guarantees a certain level of performance and responsiveness, and that's how Microsoft that's one big way that Microsoft is guaranteeing that no matter what you plug into this thing, as long as it's this official Microsoft product, you can plug in as many of these as you want, and you're guaranteeing a certain level of performance in doing so.
Is there a cost?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, we don't yet know the console, okay. The cost of the console itself, and because Microsoft is going to be the one to kind of dictate who makes these drives and what determines their quality, they are almost assuredly going to be pretty expensive too, especially since games take up a lot of space. We're just now in the generation where game consoles have 1 and 2 terabytes worth of storage on them. And so that's kind of expected to grow. And so if these end up being 1 terabyte drives, you can go on Amazon right now and look for the cost of a really high end 1 terabyte drive. You're looking at about $150, $200. It wouldn't surprise me to see them exist in about that price range, should this come out later this year.
Right. They're talking about a holiday 2020 rollout. Is there any sense that the coronavirus will affect production on this or anything?
We haven't heard anything official, but we do know that, Microsoft, like many, many other companies, has manufacturing facilities for the Xbox as well as other things in China, which is, recovering faster than other parts of the world. So it's possible that their schedule hasn't been interrupted too much by this, but it'll really depend on both Microsoft's ability to manufacture these in a timely fashion, but also the state of the economy at the time. If there aren't people able to purchase consoles, Microsoft may hold off on releasing its most expensive console and instead focus on what we know is going to be a more budget-friendly option to be announced later this year.
The loading speed is faster on it. How long do these things usually take to load?
It really depends on the game, and honestly, bigger games with higher quality visuals, you can wait. This may not seem like a lot to you, Anne, but anywhere from 30 to 70 seconds in a game. I get it. I really do. We think about the original Nintendo console, right? You plugged in the cartridge, you turned it on, the game was immediately ready to play.
Yeah.
That's a huge difference between, anytime you go to start a level, having to wait, 1 minute and possibly a little more. When you go to do that, and then when you get into that level, kind of getting to a different part of the game where it's only loaded part of it, so now you're in a different area, and that also has to load. So that's kind of been a minor frustration with the most recent generation of consoles that Microsoft is trying to address here. But yes, we are talking about 30 to 60 seconds worth of time lost here that people are unhappy with.
Which is a long time in Russell speak, because a lot of times I have to ask you, when you say it's going to be a while before it comes out, well, longer than usual, how longer? Well, another week, at least a week. So,
my perception of time is deeply damaged.
It's actually, technology has damaged all of our perceptions of time, I think. It cracks me up when I get ticked off at my computer as if. 5G. The issue of whether the high-powered cell phones cause health problems comes up from time to time, and now 5G is the newest player on the block. It's reignited the question. The International Agency for Research on Cancer says radio frequency fields are listed as possibly carcinogenic to humans, but the same classification is given to coffee, of which I've had too much today. So what do you make of this? Should we be concerned or what?
No, there's absolutely no evidence that links 5G antennas to any kind of harm. This is the same kind of noise that we have seen for years about cell phones, being hazardous to our health. I can stand here as a single point of data and suggest that if cell phones cause bodily harm, I would probably not be here to talk to you on the phone, as there have been points in my life where I was carrying not 2 or 3, but 4 or 5 phones at all times that were working and doing things. So I am a little more exposed than most people, and I am perfectly fine. There have been actual research done. There's actual, a lot of information that is collected, and very, very little data even comes close to suggesting that there is, long-term or short-term risks of harm, and that includes 5G networks. The 5G antennas, they make people a little uncomfortable because they're bigger, and in some cases you need more of them in areas, especially in New York City. There are people who live in, very close or very small apartments. and they notice these 5G antennas outside their windows, and they're big and a little on the scary looking side. And it's kind of re-emerged this, you know, are these things actually healthy for you question. And again, there's, you know, there's a tremendous amount of research that goes into these before they're even allowed to be produced. And then continuing research that, you know, 5G is not going to hurt you, aside from being potentially more expensive when you go to purchase a phone right. that has it inside.
The old-fashioned way.
That's right.
You wanted to talk about Apple's new PowerBeats headphones. There's a lot of things, not the least of which is the color options that you like, as usual. But tell us about them.
I really enjoy that you get me and how important colors are in my life. So yeah, the PowerBeats headphones, you know, the AirPods are obviously the thing that most people talk about when talking about Apple's headphones. They are the thing that gets people's attention. They stand out. They don't require a cable. They are selling like hotcakes. They're usually very difficult to get a hold of. But they just don't work for everyone. And you know, especially super athletic people, being able to have that cable, being able to have something connected to your ears is important. And so the PowerBeats headphones have always existed as that option ever since Apple purchased Beats Audio. And this is the next generation of those headsets. Now, what Apple has done, you know, since acquiring Beats is incorporated its own technology into the Beats Audio technology, which means the cool thing that Apple's headphones do when you open a set of AirPods for the first time, it just automatically becomes available on your phone so that you can kind of pair to it right away and do that. Also works on these headphones and has for the last generation or two. So they're still extremely easy to use out of the box. They sound really nice. And as you pointed out, they come in a couple of different colors. but really, they're also not particularly expensive compared to AirPods. We look at AirPods. The AirPods Pro are $250 headphones. PowerBeats headphones can often start around $100. And a lot of that is because you don't need specialist technology to pair the two of them. It relies on less Bluetooth technology and perhaps more important to people who are kind of out and about all day long. The battery on them can last up to 15 hours, whereas your AirPods will get you about 4 hours on a single charge, and then they need to go back into the case and charge for a couple minutes before you can use them again.
And at $149, it's a good one. It falls into a nice, comfortable place.
They're definitely not as expensive as the AirPods Pro, but they deliver a lot of the same functionality. And you know, if you are not offended by that cable around your neck, or you prefer it because you're a more athletic person who just needs that kind of secure fit, then these are a great option.
Okay. LG has a new phone, the LG V60. It's coming out this week. It's a Droid. What tell us about it.
Yeah, so this is an Android phone. You know, we have Samsung and Huawei and a couple other companies that are making these crazy, super expensive folding phones. And you know, they're neat in concept, but they're kind of still a little hesitant to purchase because they're still kind of fragile. LG took its existing design and said, instead of making a phone that has plastic that screens over on itself, why don't we just add an entire other phone to this phone that you can then fold like a laptop? And so that's what it did. This LG phone is a single phone that you can use, but there is an accessory that you can buy for it that is quite literally an entire another screen that is the same size of the phone that folds open and gives you a whole nother screen worth of real estate. So if you want two apps to run side by side, you are quite literally running them side by side in full screen because you have a whole other phone attached to your phone that gives you extra battery and you know things like that. But it also makes it a little thicker. It's kind of crazy. LG likes doing things a little on the weird side, and it's this is definitely one of those things. But the funny thing is that if you really do need, you know, kind of a little more screen, if you're the kind of person who, you know, obviously not right now, but if you are just kind of constantly on the go and need to work from where you are, this is a lot more functional in some cases than having to bring a laptop with you everywhere.
But Android Central wrote that it's not going to buy. No one's going to buy it.
Unfortunately, that is true. You know, this is kind of complicated because in a world of phones, you know, that are kind of quirky and interesting, there's also price to keep in mind. And while LG's phone is pretty good, it's also starting at $800, which puts it slightly above the less expensive. It puts it slightly above the base model for Samsung's newest phone. And you know, just above, or you know, and just below, you know, from a quality perspective, the really high-end Samsung phone. So it just fits in a really weird place financially, and that's why people are probably not going to pick one up.
Russell Holley, I've missed you. Take care of yourself. Hope to talk to you next week.
But absolutely, we'll talk next week.
Russell Holley, contributing editor at Android Central. That's it for Tech Tuesday today. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.